Welcome back, everybody. I hope you had a fast 15 minutes. Actually, it's been 20. Wow.
It was fast.
Time goes by fast. Right. So before I took the break, I actually meant to call your attention to page 117. You may have already looked at that, but it gives you a quick glimpse in terms of how you work your way from topic area, general purpose, specific purpose, and thesis statement, giving you specific topic. On page 117, it's look like, for example, you look to give a presentation on doctor's artistry of Dr. Seuss. And that was the topic area. And then in the general purpose was to inform. Specific purpose, it says to inform my audience of Dr. Seuss's creative persistence as he composed The Cat in the Hat. That's a statement for the specific purpose statement. And then the thesis statement read, The Cat in the Hat is the incredibly simple product of an incredibly complicated creative process. So obviously, a preview for this speech will definitely include main points that has to do to show how simple the product is by showing the simplicity of that, and also showing how complicated the main point will show the complexity of it, and then probably another main point, probably depending on how the author of the speech want to develop that. Does that make sense? So I wanted you to at least use that as a pattern to see how you move from topic area to thesis statement. That's a good process, step by step, in terms of how to do that. All right, so let's talk about putting flesh on your skeleton outline, basically, which is when in chapter 7, when you read about researching, this basically are the type different type of information that you will be researching to support your main point in for that you've already established. Okay, so let's first look at the different. Okay. I keep moving too fast. Okay, there are four types of supporting material that you read about. Okay, one was facts and statistics. You also read about testimony. You read about examples, and you read about narratives. Okay, have you ever read something and you thought it was factual until you found out later and oh, that was fiction? Have you ever heard a statement, you know, like playing the game fact or fiction? Have you ever played that game?
Yeah.
Yeah. There is a two Texas truth, if a truth and a lie. If you've ever listened to NPR, they will read certain statement. All three of them will sound like they're true, they're real, they're factual, but there's one of them that is not real. It's pure made up thing, you know, people statement. It's not based on reality. So there are. It is important for us to differentiate between what is facts and what is fiction, and there are ways to understand that facts is things, as we already said, are things that you can verify. I think you mentioned that before. So it's because it's grounded in reality. Now, I'm going to go on a limb here and said, for some reason, it looks like our society is moving beyond facts these days. Something that we know is factual, someone can turn it over its head, and for some reason, people believe something that really sounds like fiction, and sometimes they even not believe the actual fact is fact as fact. So it becomes an issue and when it comes to really, okay, what is fact? I mean, if this is fact, then you're saying it is not, then how can I prove that what you say is a lie? And tell you, okay, this is what the fact is. I can go and verify this. Okay, statistics, whatever, numbers, we can go and find this. Okay, so-and-so states, I can find the source where it says that. And then you contradict it and say, no, that's not what so-and-so said. And you want us to believe what you said as facts instead of the fact that it's already established that everybody can find somewhere. So this is becoming more, we even talk about post-truth these days. It's like there is truth and there's post-truth or fake fact, you know. I don't know where this is going. But so I bring this up so that we understand that fact for somebody, for some reason, is taking different meaning these days. Even though we know we can verify this, this is what it is, but we have people kind of flipping things around, and sometimes it can be confusing for us to really establish what is facts and what is fiction. So we made claims based on fact or information, factual information. For example, if I say, if I said the economy, the unemployment rate is below 5% right now, a claim would be that means our economic policies are working, right? It could be true, it could be false, right? Because I make that claim based on this number, based on the fact, but it all depends on where I make that claim. If I make that claim in Texas where unemployment is lower, or make that claim in another state where unemployment is higher, I have to really understand, okay, well, this is a fact, unemployment rate is lower, but that doesn't mean everyone will interpret it the same way depending on where they are in that, where their rate is in that particular state. Does that make sense? Okay, so you would have to think about you make the claim, but the claim is, you need other facts to support a claim, basically. That's what I mean. Even though unemployment rate is low, I would have, if I said the employment, economic policies are working, I would have to find other facts to make that more substantial, depending on which audience that I'm addressing. Okay. So claim must be supported with more facts and statistics, basically. So you have to continue finding things to make your point more clear and adapted to the audience that you're talking to. So what about statistics? Statistics are numerical fact, right? So you use statistics to make predictions, right? So if unemployment rate is going down, therefore we can say more jobs are being created, and you thought we can continue through that path. More people are being hired, and therefore I can start a new business because things seem to be working. So you follow the trend, you make predictions based on what the numbers say, and so statistic is an important piece of information to understand how to use that in support of key points you want to make. So statistics are precise factual statements used to verify claims, which means if you say something, I can go and see, okay, yeah, it is below 5%. Oh no, it's not below 5%. So you would have to also look at, you know, compare different numbers and different places to see, okay, well, whether this number, what it says here, is what it really is. And so statistics is and factual statements, this is one aspect of supporting material that can that is often used to support main points. So one thing I want you to know, though, you don't want to have a speech that only has facts and statistics, right? So you'd have a combination of all the different supporting material that we're going to be looking at as we go through this, okay? I want to, as I said, you need to look at numbers and factual information with a grain of salt because they often cannot stand by themselves. Even though we say we can verify facts, we can go through the source and finding that exact statement that was made that include piece of a number, a statistics or a factual statement. However, not just looking at a statement does not necessarily tell you the whole truth about that piece of information. So which means you have to put it into context. You have to try to interpret the information in terms of how does it help me understand the information itself. Okay, so let's say you read the statement, okay? Now this is fact, right? You remember that, okay? Toyota was fined $1.2 billion for concealing safety defects. That's a factual statement. It actually happened. And you can go to several places and find that statement. Now, when you look at the number 1.2 billion, what comes to your head? What comes to your mind?
A lot of money.
Yes, that's a lot of money to be paid and fined, right?
I was thinking that's a drop in the bucket for Toyota.
Is that what you are thinking?
Yes.
Well, you would have been thinking right. So we'll see how that is. But for most people, the number itself, they just focus on the number and say, wow, 1.2 billion. I could do something with that, right? Okay, so that sounds like a lot of money. But what do you need to know about Toyota's financial situation to interpret that number appropriately?
Yeah, how much they're worth and how much they're making.
Exactly.
What their revenue is.
Exactly. So without that background information, this number doesn't tell me much. Mm-hmm. Even though it is factual, it is a lot of money, I need to interpret this number in the context of Toyota's financial situation. So you could use this number many different ways. Wow. The government is really out to get those companies. See how much money they're finding them? And then once you start looking at, oh, $1.2 billion is only 2% of their cash reserve at that time. Does that change your perspective about $1.2 billion?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Suddenly, it's almost like two pennies in your pocket. Okay, so you have to interpret factual information, facts and statistics, whether it's statistics or factual or numbers or factual statement. You have to interpret them and put them into context when you use them to support your point. Because you may think you have a good, solid support, but when you say that, everybody said, well, yeah, but do you know that's only 2% of their cash reserve? So it's not a lot of money as you're making it out to be. Okay, so you discredit yourself by not understanding that piece of information. Okay? So, second type of supporting material is testimony. Okay, you can use your own testimony. You could use other people's testimony, and when you use other people's testimony, you can use it by quoting them directly, or by rephrasing their testimony, you know, summarize them in other words, using your own words, basically, okay? So you cite, you use testimony to cite words and ideas of others in support of your message, because that help you gain credibility where you are not expert in some areas, okay? So if you use expert testimony, then that helps you to build credibility for your speeches. Okay? So what are the different types of testimony? And I'm going to ask you to think with me where you have seen those different type of testimony when you watch infomercials and things like that. You know, so I'd like you to think with me about, think with some infomercials that you've watched and what type of testimony was used. Okay, so expert testimony, for example, is what? It's based on what? It's based on people who are expert in that field, right? They've based on research, they are very, they are an authority in that field, okay? So if I really want people to really believe that what I'm saying is valid, I cannot just base it on what my grandmother said, okay? Unless my grandmother was an expert in that field, and I can quote my grandmother as having researched and done, okay, that's not enough. I have this student who told me in one time that we're talking about how sometimes the way we grew up sometimes determine the decision we make in life. And a student told me that his mother told him, always look out for number one. And I said, well, I'm sure that was a good advice, but what do you think about that? Look out for number one. So always be egotistical, always look out for only yourself and never look at that. May have been a good idea, probably in the context it was said, I don't know. But okay, to me, if it would be more than that, I would need to, okay, in what way your mother told you to always look out for number one, you would need more information. So that's what I mean. Sometimes there are things that we hear from people we respect, but unfortunately, that doesn't make the person an expert in that field, no matter how much I respect you want to follow your advice and things like that. So expert testimony, you see that a lot in the court of law when they call someone to testify, right? This person can be torn to pieces if they're not really holding up to the credibility that is associated with their position, okay? How about lay testimony?
Probably someone without really credentials to back up their expertise.
Who is not, or who is?
Who is not.
Who is not, okay. So, experts are the researchers, the authors, the scientists, you know, the professionals and things like that, you know. On the other side, you have lay testimony. Those are the people, the ordinary people, okay? When it comes to using products or services, those are the actual people who uses those products. They didn't create it. They don't know how it made. It's just like, you know, I'm using this computer. I am not a computer scientist, so I don't know everything about how this computer is made, but I can tell you if it works well. All right. So that's why before you buy anything online, what do? You go to the
reviews.
The reviews and see what do people say about this service? What do people say about this company? What do they say about this product? So that you can decide whether it's good or not. So those people are the ones who are actually the ordinary Joes, you know, but they've used it. And therefore, they know whether it works or not. The expert might tell you, yes, it works. If they don't use it, then it probably don't know. Okay, so how do you see those in infomercials? Can you think back to an infomercial or a commercial that you've seen where they use that to make the message go come across, to convey the message?
I think about that Geico commercial where you save all this money on car insurance, and so you have, "Hi, I'm Jennifer, and I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance," but they don't tell you how much sometimes, or they don't give you all the details.
Yeah. Okay. So how about people, for example, when they on those infomercials for weight loss, you know, or maybe a commercial for a kitchen product, you know, something like that. So they will show people using it, and then so they will probably show the before and the after kind of thing, you know, to show how this product is effective. So those are people who they're showing you who actually have used it, and this is what it does for them, and so forth. So those people would be able to speak to say, you know, "I've used this product," and it is. So when you hear that, you're probably more prone to believe them because they actually have used it, compared to Michael Jordan, who goes on the Hanes commercial and hold that underwear and said, "Hanes." Now, Michael Jordan is an example of prestige testimony. He is the guy who people know him. He's popular. So as soon as they see Michael Jordan with that underwear, they said, "Well, if Michael Jordan is making commercial for this, then therefore it must be good. I'm going to buy it." Whether that's true or not, we don't know. Whether Michael Jordan has ever worn Hanes underwear, we don't know. But his face on that commercial make you want to buy it. Okay? So that's what we mean by the different type of testimony that you may find, and expert, lay, and prestige. Okay, so testimony must be relevant no matter how you use it. Okay? It must be relevant to your point. Testimony must seem free from bias, because if you try to, you know, make it say what it doesn't say, or use people's word out of context, then it may backfire on you. Okay, testimony must be recent enough so that it's not obsolete, because something that was said, you know, 5 years ago may have been debunked. So you would want to make sure that nothing new has already come up, and because that also will backfire on you. Testimony should reflect the overall meaning and intent of its author, which means don't take something, pluck it out of the context it was meant to be used, and make it walk on all fours. That's an old saying, that you make it say everything that you want it to say. We see that a lot with the Bible, right? People make the Bible say everything they want it to say, as long as it supports their position, what they think is right. So that's what we mean by always look at it in context when you try to use someone's testimony to support your point. Let me go back and ask you this in regard to testimony. If you wanted to give a presentation that includes controversial issues, which testimony would be most appropriate for you to use among the three that we just identified?
Probably the expert, I'm going to guess. Because you want them to be credible, especially if it's controversial and people are going to, you know, disagree or what have you.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's controversial, and you need facts to back it up. So I agree.
Exactly. Okay. So it is important to know what type of supporting material that you're going to use, depending on the situation that you face. Okay. So you don't want to be quoting Joe the Plumber when it comes to scientific things, all right? Because Joe the Plumber is a plumber and not a scientist, in other ways, you know, that you may want to quote that. But what we mean is always figure out what type of testimony would be most appropriate based on what you want to accomplish here. Okay. All right. So the third type of supporting material is examples. All right. You hear that a lot. When you say something, you make a statement and someone said, give me an example. Why do you think they asked that?
Well, they're probably skeptical. Okay. So they want an example.
Or looking for clarification.
Looking for clarification. That's one of the things supporting material does for your speeches. It helps you clarify things. It helps you. So you would have to determine, what type of information would be more effective to support this particular point. Okay. So if an example is needed, there are all different type of example that you look at in chapter 8, page 156. It talks about all the different types of examples. Okay, so first you need to understand that example serves as verbal illustrations. You use example to illustrate things, to give more detail, more information, so that you bring things home for the audience. Examples that you use, you would want them to be relevant to the audience so that they can identify with those examples, okay? And because the reason they're asking you for example is they're still not clear about it and they want more information. So sometimes you may give one example and they still don't get it. You give another example that is more appropriate and more down to earth, okay? Julie?
Oh, no.
Okay. So examples help make the message clear and more vivid to the audience, it helps them to maintain interest, because when they hear examples that they can relate to, they tend to be more focused and following with you. And some examples that you give may be personal to you, and that humanize you even more to them, because if the example is something that they can say, oh yeah, so you have some personal experience in that area that relates specifically to the topic that you are talking about. So it helps humanize the speaker in a way. So let's let's take a look at some example of some example of different types of example on page 157, for example. We talk about extended example, factual example, hypothetical example. Does anyone has a book open?
I do.
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to hear you, one of you, read for me the two paragraphs under the extended example. Let's start with I met 9-year-old Ginger.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Julie.
No, you're good.
Let me get it? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I met 9-year-old Ginger. Having a 9-year-old girl myself, her height and manner of speaking was immediately familiar and evocative. Having confronted so many crying adults at that point, I felt ready to deal with anything. Then Ginger looked at me began to cry and told me she was scared. She told me she had lost everything. She had lost her home and her belongings. She asked me to help her. As my eyes filled with tears, I took a deep breath and thought about what I would say to my Bridget if she said the same thing to me. If she had the same look on her face, if she had the same tears in her eyes, I asked her where her mom was, and she pointed right behind her. I asked her if her dad was okay. She told me he was. So I told Ginger, you haven't lost your home. You've just lost a house. A house we can replace. Your home is with your mom and dad. I hugged her and told her not to cry, that the adults are in charge now and there was nothing to be afraid of anymore. Ginger is here today. We've kept in touch, and I want to thank her for giving voice to New Jersey's children during Sandy and helping to create a memory of humanity in a sea of despair.
Okay, so this is an example of an extended example. And when we talk about humanize the speaker, this is really close, talking about referring to his daughter, you know, compared to this particular person that he was, the example was about. So that's really bring home that I empathize with you. I really understand, because if that were my daughter, that would, I would feel the same way and things like that. Okay. There's also what we call a brief example that you could give on page 156, where it says, in a speech to the National Prayer Breakfast, rock star and social activist Bono used a series of brief examples while exhorting American leaders to set aside 1% of the federal budget for African relief programs. And this is how he used brief example in that speech. 1% is not merely a number on a balance sheet. 1% is the girl in Africa who gets to go to school thanks to you. 1% is the AIDS patient who gets her medicine thanks to you. 1% is the African entrepreneur who can start a small family business thanks to you. 1% is not redecorating presidential palaces or money flowing down a rat hole. This 1% is digging water holes to provide clean water. That's basically a series of brief examples to make a point about the importance of setting aside this percentage of money for those projects. And then lastly, I'd like you to look at the hypothetical example. So we look at an example of extended example, the example of brief example, and those factual, those are basically things that are real things that happen. But I'd like you to also read the example of hypothetical example, starting on page 158. Does anyone want to take that?
I'll read it.
Okay, hypothetical example.
Okay. Let me introduce to you Madison Cartwright. Madison is 12 years old. She's 4 feet 11 inches tall. She weighs 155 pounds. Her body mass index is over 29. This means that Madison is one of the more than 9 million children and teenagers in this country who can be classified as obese. How does this affect her? Not only, my lighting's not good right now, sorry.
That's okay.
Move my book. How does this affect her? Not only is she a prime candidate for health problems such as childhood diabetes, but she also has other problems. She loves softball, but has difficulty playing because she gets short of breath. So she sits in the bleachers and watches her classmates. Madison is very smart and she hates school. She is often the butt of fat jokes and teasing by her classmates. Instead of playing outside or socializing with friends after school, Madison goes home and watches TV by herself. Her self-esteem is very low. Is Madison a real person? Well, yes and no. You may not find someone with her name at the middle school you attended, but you will find many Madisons in the seventh grade there. Childhood obesity in the United States has reached epidemic proportions.
Okay. So you need to make sure when you use hypothetical example that it is clear to the audience that it is not a real person. So that, again, when we talk about exaggerating claims and so that, okay, I am making a comparison here. And this could be a real person, but this is not a real story. Okay, so that it's clear the audience is not confused about that part. Okay. All right. So how about fourth type of supporting material is stories, narrative. Okay. Some of us are really good at telling stories. Oh, not in a bad way, because I think that may sound bad when I said you really good at telling stories. Okay. No, not in a bad way. Okay. If that is your strength, then definitely use it. If you're a good storyteller, use that to your advantage when it comes to, you know, giving speeches and preparing presentations. So narrative, you tell a story, and it includes usually any story would have a beginning, a middle, and an end, right? So it relates to a specific sequence of action, right? And that's why you move, whenever you start a story, people are looking for the climax of the story. If it's a joke, they're looking for the punchline, right? So you have to really plan that out very well to know where each of those things will be placed in that story, okay? Because we are emotional being, stories tend to have a more persuasive impact on us than fact and statistics may have. So if you want to really draw an audience and you really know how to tell a good story as a support, then definitely develop that skill and learn to do that better. Improve your skills in doing that. Some speeches can be a big story, just big story, right? The beginning is the introduction. The middle is the, you know, plot of the story. And then you have basically the end is really the epilogue, you know, where you finish the story. So, some of the functions that you may think that stories can do, they as I said, they tend to be more emotional, arise more emotion in people than numbers or fact. It can encourage desirable transformation of identity and behavior when you hear a story that you can relate to. Okay. If I start telling you a story about how I became a Christian, okay, then you probably have a better way of, you know, relating to that than if I use all facts and statistics that may not have as the same impact. It enhances the message, the impact of the message, because of the emotional factor on that. Okay, you may not be reached as easily as with facts and numbers as we would with a story, because we're emotional being, right? Okay, so let's see. How do you put set a story together well. Okay. I'm going to read from that book, a passage really that set this up for us, from by Darlene Price and her book, Well Said. She gives us a kind of a template in terms of how, if you're putting together a story, it doesn't have to be that long, okay? Now, if your speech if your entire speech is a story, that's what we would call the master narrative. But if you have embedded story within your speech, which could be anywhere, which could be at the beginning, in the introduction, which could be used as one of your sub points in your outline. So you can have that almost anywhere in the speech. You could use it at the beginning, the middle, in the middle, at the end to conclude your speech. So this is what really a versatile type of supporting material that goes anywhere, really, if you use it well. And so here is what Darlene said in terms of how to set up a story, okay? First, you want to make sure you set the scene, okay? Because you have to really create a vivid image in the mind of your audience so that they can see, they can follow through with you. Set the scene, which the time, the place, the characters that are involved in the story. Tell what happened, the trouble, you know, what problem, the obstacle, what conflict exists, and how you overcome that obstacle, okay? And reveal what reward you earn as a result of overcoming that obstacle. And then turn it over to the audience, you know, transfer the story to the audience and their action. Because remember, you making that connection, you're trying to make a connection by telling a story, okay? So let me read this so you can see how those five steps are seen in this particular passage here. This was an introduction to your sales presentation, by the way, okay? 2 weeks ago, I was visiting one of my customers in California, a large 800-bed hospital, similar to your size here at Medical General. Remember about setting the scene, okay? Follow through the steps with me. Cindy Smith, Director of Patient Services, told me about a little boy named Roy who had fallen off his bike and skinned his knee badly. That's no big deal for kids, you know. You know how resilient they can be, right? However, Roy's mother saw the scene out of the kitchen window, shrieked, and raced him to the hospital. Why the panic? Roy is hemophiliac. Last year, after a similar incident, he almost died due to blood loss because of the extreme weight in the emergency department. They didn't have enough beds to serve the patient population. Roy's mom knew this. As she frantically drove, she prayed, "Please, let them be able to see him right away." This time, when the son and mother arrived, it was a different story. Roy was in the bed with the bleeding stopped in less than 5 minutes. You see, since last year, this hospital was able to add 5 new treatment rooms without a single capital expenditure by using the XYZ document imaging solution. They freed up 5,000 square feet of space formerly used for medical records and converted it to patient rooms. As a result, the hospital's patient satisfaction ratings are sky high. the physicians and clinicians are happier. Plus, they're treating 20% more patients and realizing increased revenues at a lower cost structure. Through a simple choice called electronic document imaging, they've devoted newfound space where it was needed most, the emergency department and Roy's knee. Now switching it over, how about your team here at Memorial General? Does this story sound familiar? How many more Roy's could you serve with a few extra emergency department rooms? And what would that extra capacity mean for patients and employee satisfaction, not to mention increased revenue? The purpose of today's presentation is to explore how the XYZ document imaging solution can benefit Memorial General Hospital. Were you able to follow this step through that? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So basically, this is what we mean by framing a story. And sometimes it could be something personal to you. It could be a story that you use for from somebody else that involves someone else. So it all depends on how you put all those things together so that it's vivid. You're creating an image in your audience mind. Okay. So what we said earlier is it's not just factual example. It's not just stories unless your speech is a master narrative. It's not just testimonies. It's not just facts and statistics, but it's all of that. It's all of them that makes your speech really versatile, where you include various types of supporting information and not just one type. So if you combine those very well, or for example, you have your first main point, subpoint A could be facts and statistics, where you talk about, you know, difference depending on the type of information you're presenting. Subpoint B could be a story. Subpoint C could be a testimony. And then you continue like that, very, very, very kind of vary from point to point and different type of supporting information. So your research, this is what you'll be looking for. Is there a good story that I can find that support this point very well? Is there a good example that I can find that support this point very well? And then continue like that, finding specific things. For example, you see how the formal outline has, you know, subpoint, sub-subpoint, you know, sub-sub-subpoint. So the more specific you become, you're dropping down to, you know, the level from main point, which is more general, to subpoint, which is a little bit more specific, that directly support that main point. And then you have sub-subpoint that directly support that subpoint, and so on and so forth. Okay. So let's finish with looking at some examples and determine what type of supporting material you think would be most appropriate for each of the for one of two of those, because we won't have time to do all of them, as we said before. Okay, so let's look at a speech that deals with that's good, supporting or not supporting gun control legislation. What type of supporting material do you think? I mean, obviously, once you start researching, you would come up with a lot of things, but at the top of your head, just for the sake of really thinking through those things, what type of supporting material do you think would be most effective to use? And how do you think you might incorporate those things, those supporting material, in a topic like this? Obviously, that will depend on your thesis statement in terms of what exactly you want your speech to do, but I want you going to kind of really think through a little bit.
Yeah, I think if you'd probably have to decide if you're going to support it or not support it, of course.
Okay.
And so take your position.
Okay. And so then, let's decide on not supporting it.
Okay. So what would probably be powerful in not supporting it would be a testimony of how guns have hurt maybe a family, maybe you know, someone was hurt with a gun, and you bring that testimony story in there. Also, maybe some statistics, some facts about increased, increased accidental murders because of guns went off, something like that, you know, and just continue to show some of that together. I think that a lot of times those stories are very powerful.
Okay. So what type of testimony would that be? Would that be expert, lay, or prestige?
Probably more of a lay testimony, because it'd be someone who has guns, who experienced something negative with it, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, where someone who lost a family member because of gun violence, would they be considered an expert on what it can do?
Okay, so what do you guys think?
Probably. I mean, go ahead, John.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the expert term is like backed up with facts and maybe data. So although I think it is an individual example, so I think that to be considered an expert would have to be data provided, or I guess examples that.
So, what type of example for someone who has actually had someone victim of that?
Sorry, what was that?
What type of example what type of testimony would that be? Do you think it would be?
I agree with Anthony. I think it's a lay.
It's a lay. Okay. Yeah, that would be a lay testimony, Julie. Because it's someone who has actually who has some personal experience with that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so testimony. What other type of example? What other type of supporting material would work well for this?
I think data showing how many. Like I think Anthony kind of said it, but data showing how many times prevented. Crime or prevented a break-in, how many times guns prevented those things.
Okay, so that would be for supporting it? Because we decided that we would be looking at not supporting it. Would what you say be on the other side of supporting it?
Then I guess it'd be the opposite.
Okay.
I guess accidental crimes in a household that a family member has accidentally shot. Yeah, you hear stories all the time, like an animal shot the gun, something like crazy.
Right. Okay. All right. So, definitely facts and statistics I'm hearing. Okay. What about narrative and examples? Will they also be effective in that?
Yeah, I think you would. You could give a specific example of someone who experienced something negative with the gun. Whether their own, say, son, they didn't lock up their gun and their son grabbed it. But also your personal testimony would be powerful, because you could say, well, my cousin or my uncle, this is what happened with him. And that would really bring it home for an example. And then also you could use maybe the testimony. I think the testimony part, you could really do something with supporting, if you were to support gun control, with an expert, someone with credentials, maybe from, the National Rifle Association or, you know, something like that, get their testimony on what research and what statistics they're showing.
Right.
Somebody like that.
Very good. So obviously it looks like all four types of supporting material could be used in a speech like that. And that would be a good combination of really combining all type of those supporting materials. So that's basically what your research will be involving, is looking for those things. Once you identify your thesis statement and your specific purpose, and you have an idea of the points that you want to advance, then you start looking for those things to support those points that you want to advance. Make sense?
Makes sense.
All right. On that point, I think we're going to end it here. So today we got a chance to talk about finding your topic and refining it by coming up with a specific purpose statement and a thesis statement. And then we talk about how to put flesh on that working outline once you identify those points that you want to develop further, and how to research and what type of information you need to research for to support those points. So next week, we should be continuing to be talking about informative speeches, and I believe we should also be talking about how to deliver different delivery methods that we can consider when it comes to giving your speeches. We also hopefully will have you here to do your reading, scripture reading, as part of the assignments that's due for next week. Make sure to work on your working outline.
Yep. I have a question for you.
Sure. Professor.
How is your wife and baby girl doing?
Thank you so much for asking. We're taking it a day at a time now. So they are doing okay. They keep monitoring everything, including the baby. And it looks like tomorrow, I think there is a major evaluation that they're going to be checking the baby to make sure that she is receiving enough oxygen and enough nutrient to help with the growth. So depending on how that goes, that will determine how much further we keep it in. So so they're monitoring everything, and she is I'm happy with the service that she's receiving, and so I think she's in a good place, and God is really working through the process with us. So we just continue to pray that everything will continue to go well, at least for to keep it in as long as possible, and for us not to have to rush to do something because of the developing situation that we cannot keep it in anymore. So, but yeah, that's where we are. So it's okay so far. I think we are we're looking at something positive, hopefully.
I'll keep you and your family in my prayers.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, same here.
Right. Thanks.
Well, have a good night, everybody. See you next week.
All right. Good night, guys. Looking forward to your scripture reading.
All right. Night.
Night.